Dear friends, some of you haven't been here last week, therefore it might be good in the beginning to give an introduction on what Bethel means as a little village of the mercy of God. And then later on I would like to talk on the two Bodelschwings, father and son. They are remarkable men. And out of this comes one special point of spiritual life in Bethel. So this will be the program tonight. Let's begin with a little bit history of Bethel and what Bethel now is. In 1867, there was a letter coming, no, 1865, there was a letter coming from France. A pastor with the name Jean Bost had taken care of orphan children, and then he saw the special suffering of those who were suffering by epileptics. So he built up homes for epileptic children. And he wrote a letter to Germany saying, you are such a big nation, and Goethe and Beethoven and Bach and other remarkable men, you have to care for epileptic children. And then he spoke on his experiences. It's a 7 pages long, very, well, a letter which goes to your heart. And then merchant men and some bosses in industrial enterprises, they got this letter in Bielefeld. And they bought this farming house and began with 4 epileptic boys. Well, this is the kind God is doing his work in his kingdom. Someone hears something, sees something, and then God is speaking to his heart and to his mind. And then he has to go and to do what God says to him. I have been in Netherlands in an institution which cares for epileptics and for mentally sick people. And then I was told there has been an architect in the last century who had been in Germany and he saw Bethel. And he came back and he invited friends and organized money and began an institution like Bethel called Wolfhete. I've been in Denmark, close to Copenhagen, and I came to a little institution called Philadelphia, and I was told there was a doctor in this, a physician in this little village. He saw Bethel, he came back, and he founded Philadelphia. And Fritz Neustadt told me some days ago of a pastor in Iowa who has been in Bethel about 10 years ago. He saw Bethel, he came back, he founded houses for children, handicapped children, and old men and women who can no longer live by themselves, and he called it Village for Handicapped. I think this is the kind God is doing his work, and I hope you go around in the world like these men, seeing something and listening to what God has to say. This, I now show some pictures of Bethel. This is the very entrance of Bethel. No walls around it, no door where you have to knock, but such a little house in which someone is sitting around the clock. You can come whenever you want. There's someone sitting, listening to you. You can sit down. You can put down your luggage. You can phone, whatever you want. This is the kind of reception we like in Bethel. You are welcome. And then Bethel grew very fast. In 1872, Pastor von Bodelschwing, he was 41 years old at this time, came to Bethel. Just before, he had lost four of his children in 10 days. They died by diphtheria, you say so? And so he knew what sickness can do to a person. And he knew that we need the mercy of God to comfort us and to help us. Another picture. You see, Bethel is in a beautiful valley, two valleys. In between the two valleys is this mountain with these with a beautiful forest on it. It are now about 8,000 who are living there, sick ones and so-called healthy ones. This is, well, let's say the marketplace, the center of Bethel. To the left, this red building is our parish house in which we meet and have our festivals. And Ophir, that is our storehouse in which you can buy whatever you want. We print our own money in Bethel. We are the only one village in Bethel who is allowed to print its own money because of we want that our handicapped and diseased boys and girls and men and women can buy what they want, can have money in their pocket. They shall feel like we feel. And since it might be a little bit difficult for them to go to Bielefeld, we print our own money and we have this storehouse in which they can buy, and we also. Well, first, I have to tell a little bit more on Bethel. It grew very fast. The first decision which Father Bodelschwing made has been to ask a small group of deaconesses who were living in Bielefeld to come and to help him in his work with epileptic boys. And this was a very good decision. The sisterhood grew very quickly. In a letter which he wrote, he writes, at the beginning of this year, we had 36 deaconesses. Now, in the middle of the year, it are 82. At the end of the year, it will be 100. And they have been devoted girls, and they got a most excellent education. They grew to a number of more than 2,000. In this time, there have not been much opportunities to take a profession for a girl in Germany not. In this time, the church was, in Bethel, was progressive. They had some kind of a profession for a girl who did not marry. Now a deaconess, after she gets her education, she is consecrated, and then she gives four promises. The first is not to marry. The next is to live by pocket money. The third is to be sent by the mother house and not to look for the place where the where she wants to work by herself. And the next is to live in the spiritual sisterhood of together with all the other deaconesses. That seems to be very hard, but it isn't. If you read in the New Testament what St. Paul is writing on charisma, the gift which God has given to you, and you live with this charisma, then you can become a very happy person. Most of our deaconesses are happy persons. Malcolm Magaris, the editor of Punch, the satirical magazine in England, he was feared in England because of his satiric approach to a critical approach to many things in life. When he visited Bethel, he said, well, these deaconesses, this is an astonishing thing. He has written a book on Jesus, and in this book on Jesus, he writes a page on Bethel and his experiences in a service in our Waldkirche. In summertime, we have services outside the church, under the trees in the forest. And there he saw the deaconesses sitting, singing, being together with their thick ones, sick, with his ears. And this very critical man was moved by seeing this. And then 1877, also we got a deacon's brotherhood. Deacon gets a education, 5 years, 3 years in a special profession, nursing or pedagogics or whatever else, and 2 years theology, and then he can marry, and then he get his salary, but he is living in his brotherhood, and together with the brotherhood, he decides where he is going to work. Now I want to talk on some of the groups of diseased people which we have. The biggest group still are the epileptics. Nobody knows exactly what epilepsy really is. We know that there's something going wrong in the brain. This man has, these things on his head, and the nurse is on a instrument which we call EEG, and you can measure what is going on in your brain, the electrical streams which are going through the brain. And then you see on a paper what is going wrong. And when the epileptic attacks coming, then the inscription on this paper is completely changing. Then you see what is going wrong in the brain. Now, the number of epileptics seems to be the same in all nations. very small number, not even 1%, half of 1% in each nation. In Germany, we have 60 million population and about 300,000 epileptics. 90% of them can live at home with a little bit help, and some of them are most excellent men. The famous Russian poet Dostoevsky has been an epileptic, and in some of his books he describes an epileptic attack. They are the most vivid descriptions of epileptic attacks. 90% can live by their own, but 10% have so much difficulties that they have to be in an institution like Bethel. And these are in Germany 30,000 boys and girls and men and women. This is a small group of boys, epileptic boys, and they have their confirmation class. They have their confirmation class for their own confirmation class, because most of them, the epileptic attacks do damage to the brain, and slowly they damage the brain more and more. Then they begin to speak very, very slowly. They are searching for the words and don't find them. They cannot go, or they do very difficult to go. They don't have a feeling for how the movement of is going, and things like this. And they have their special class in confirmation, and also their special schools, but the confirmation is together with the children out of the other families. And it's a beautiful confirmation service. These are the medicaments which we now have. Very many medicaments, and they are very helpful. They are getting more and more effective. And the question right now is to find the right medicament and the doses of medicament. We are doing research and try to find out the right doses. There are biochemists and physicians who work together, and they take the blood this hour, 2 hours later, 2 hours later, and again 2 hours later, and then in a special instrument called gas chromatograph, they can measure how the medicaments are taken by the blood. And so we can try to find out the best medicament and the right doses. And it happens more and more that we can at least diminish number of attacks, or even bring them to not to come. I have to beg your pardon for doing much harm to your ears by speaking my terrible English and my bad pronunciation. Well, we have other kinds of therapy. This is physical therapy, which is very, very important. This is gymnastic, all kind of gymnastic. Now, there comes another group of Well, let me see. In 1883, Oderzwing had gave a speech on a big congress in Germany, and he said, "I have now made 16 years experience with epileptics in Bethel. I propose to have institutions like Bethel all over the country, from the North Sea to the Alps." And then he said, "The optimal size, 500 beds, close to a middle-sized city," and so on and so on. And if there would have been men and women in Germany to take up this proposal, then we would have institutions enough all over Germany. But this did not happen. There are some other institutions in Hamburg, close to Stuttgart, and so on. Some, but not enough. And therefore, the number of epileptics in Bethel is now 2,200. This is too much, but anyone has to help them. Now, the next group are boys who have become criminal. And they come for about a year. And we try to give them some kind of education, either school or education for a profession. They are becoming more and more younger. 12 years, 13 years of age, 14 years. In former times, they have been 16, 17, 18 years. Very many of them alcoholics. He gets a training in farming. He gets a training in some kind of industrial work. We try to give them a starting point for a new life. And they are becoming more and more free during this year, and at the end, they do not live in Bethel, they live outside in the city, in a home in the city, so that they get the feeling of being on their own feet. Now, children who are damaged in more than one direction, mentally and physically, epileptic, blind, and whatever else. And we have quite a lot of special schools for them. Here a group is singing, making music. One of our great European physicians with the name Orff, he found out special instruments which are very easy to play with, but you can have a whole orchestra with these instruments, the Orff'sche instrument. And they are very, very good for our handicapped young boys and girls. Another group are, well, it's difficult to say it in your language. Maybe you say tramps, but this is not, I think it's not the right word for this group in Germany. We say nicht sesshafte. These are men who lost contact with their neighbors, with their family. Most of them are divorced or just have gone, left their family. They are not able to come along in doing some professional work. They just go and walk and be here and be there. About 70 to 90,000 right now in Germany. Well, this expression, nicht sesshaft, Bodenschwing did not like it. Farming is a very good work. Outside, Bodenschwing bought a big country where we call it Moor, that is, the ground is full of water and you can even completely sink in the ground. We call it moor. And he bought such a big moor and cultivated it with these brethren from the road and the boys who had become criminal. Now it is cultivated country. Here again. Well, there are some other groups, I have no pictures, mentally sick ones and others, alcoholics. Let me say a little bit on the whole idea. On the whole, it are more than 5,000 sick men and women and children. But they are not in some kind of a hospital, separated from the society. Our idea in Bethel is to live together with them in one community, political community and a Christian congregation, and to share life with one another. And this has to do with the goal of Bethel. One of the sentences of Bodil Schwing has been, you can take medicine, or let's say therapy, on many places. The goal of Bethel goes further on. The goal in Bethel is eternity. Now, eternity does not only mean something which comes behind death. This also, we Christians know that death does not separate us from God. But eternity comes right now. You can live eternal life right now. And those who are suffering may be for their lifetime, from childhood until the last day in their life. If you can bring them this eternal life, to be accepted by God, to live in the love of God, to be sure that they are children of God. No, sons and daughters, we have heard. Sons and daughters of God. And that this is happening in a koinonia with others. That it is not only told to them, but it is happening day by day that we are accepting one another. There's no difference in between someone who may say he is healthy. Well, what is to be healthy? I lift my wife. On the morning I said goodbye, and she did her work, she's a physician, on the morning, and on the afternoon I was phoned in a meeting, and I was called that she couldn't go a step on a day, and I had to come with a doctor, and then she had to be in the hospital for 13 weeks. We had made our plans to be together here in Holden Village. And now slowly, very slowly, she is recovering. And this only because our neurologist was with me in this meeting, and he came immediately, and he could immediately give the right diagnosis and do the best of therapy. So what is to be healthy? So we think, on the other side, we say handicapped. I know no one person who is not handicapped. I'm handicapped in quite a lot of fields in my life. I'm not so musical than Paul is. And I saw two boys this afternoon running and running and running. I wouldn't stand through such a run. So everyone has his being handicapped. And on the other side, I do not know any person who is only handicapped, nothing else than handicapped. So the differences are relative. And therefore, we like to live together. Not that those who are or think they are healthy are those who are bringing therapy to those who are sick. And those who are sick are the objects of what the others, being the subjects, are doing. We think this is a completely wrong understanding of how to come along with one another. We have to live together. And so if you come to Bethel, you will be in a village in which handicapped and healthy persons are living together like a political, in the same political community and in the same Christian congregation. Oh, there are still some pictures which I didn't think about. Brethren from the highways. Well, now, I want to show you some pictures of Bodelschwings. This is the picture of the father. He has been the leading person in Bethel from 1872 to 1910. And then his son from 1910 to 1946. That means a period of three quarters of a century. Two most excellent men. And we say thank to God for these two men for so long a period. Father Bodelschwing was an excellent organizer. He could as well have been going into politics or in industry. In any case, he would have become a most excellent organizer. But he also was a very spiritual, he lived a rich spiritual life. In the age of 72, he wanted to become a member of the parliament, and this again shows up his wide horizon. He said, we in Bethel have cared for quite a lot of single sick people, but at the same time they are groups, and if you want to help a single person in this group, you at the same time have to do something for the whole group. You cannot only do something for the single person. You have at the same time to do something to change the whole pattern of life for the group. So he became a member of the parliament, and he tried to be introduced what he called barmherzige Gesetze, laws which are made by mercy and not only by justice, by mercy. And I think this is one of the most important problems of mankind at all. How mercy and justice belong together. I don't know, is justice the right word? Is it someone who speaks German and English? I mean, Barmherzigkeit und Gerechtigkeit. It's correct. Justice alone can be very, very hard. It's a good thing. Justice is a good thing. But justice alone can be a very hard thing. Justice needs to be related, like twins are living together, with mercy. All right. Well, but I want to take up only one single point which has been important in the life of Father Bodelschwingh. Theodor Heuss, he was the first president in the Federal Republic of Germany after the war. He has written an article on Bodelschwingh. And in this article, he calls him den genialsten Bettler, den Deutschland je gesehen hat. The most genius beggar which Germany ever has seen. Now, this sounds a little bit curious, but this really has been something astonishing with Bodelschwingh. He didn't beg for money. He didn't begin to beg for money. He began to beg for, let's say, stamps, used stamps. Nobody could do anything with them. He says, send them to Bethel, I can do something with them. And last year, we sold millions of stamps which we get from all over the world. And the profit has been more than 200,000 marks. And 40 of our patients do a very, very good work, very clean work with taking off the stems, putting them together and things like this before we sell them. Or he asked for worn out clothes. And when I came to Bethel in 68, in the average we got every day about 800 packages with worn out clothes. Now the postage has gone higher and higher, and we now invite our friends to bring the worn-out clothes to special places. This again is a good work for quite a lot of our patients to aussortieren, put the best ones on this side and so on and so on. And the best clothes we need for to clothe our sick men and women and children, and others is again sold. Now this kind of begging, in Bodelschwingh understood it in a spiritual way, to ask someone to do something for a deceased man or woman meant to engage him, to take him out of passivity and to let him do something active. Not everyone can do nursing, but everyone can participate in caring for the diseased ones. And let me take an example. He needed more water when Bethel grew and grew. And he had found out that he needed 50,000 marks for making some pipelines for water. He did not ask for 50,000 marks for this pipeline, but he wrote to all the friends, I want 1 liter, maybe half a gallon, I don't know exactly the measures in America, 1 liter of fresh water every day for every single diseased man and woman in Bethel. And you could give 2 marks, then you give 1 liter fresh water every day to a single diseased person in Bethel. You see, this is something else than just, this really means engagement for a single diseased person. Then he founded the so-called Pfennigverein. That means he asked friends please take a card and write the names of your neighbors on it, and then go along and ask your neighbors to give every week one penny for Bethel. Now a penny is not much, but 10 pennies are a little bit, and 100 pennies are 1 mark, and 1,000 pennies are 10 marks. So, and you now, those on these lists became friends of Bethel. Someday I got a letter, and enclosed in the letter was a postcard out of the year 1904. And on the postcard there was a thank you of Bodelschwing, which said, you have sent a package with worn-out clothes. Thank you for this. God bless you, Friedrich von Bodelschwing. Now, this postcard had gone to the grandmother of this lady which sent me the letter, and she wrote in the letter, my grandma liked this postcard, and she gave it to my mother, and my mother gave it to me, and I am now going into a home for old, senile people, and I have to give up much of my things. Don't you have a museum in Bethel for this postcard? You see, it was some kind of a precious rarity, a precious thing, heritage in the family. And then she wrote, when my mother went around with us children, she had a umbrella with a nagel on it, like this. And when she went through the streets, and she saw silver paper. In this time, chocolate was put into silver paper. Then she picked it up. This was sent to Bethel. And this, she had learned this being a child through years and years, how the mother picked up every single piece of silver paper and sent it to Bethel. And then to get a thank you from Bethel, everyone who sent whatever he did send got a thank you from Bethel. Now, this business of asking someone to engage, to do something for diseased people, and at the same time say thank you to them, I think this is a very important act of intercommunion amongst men. To say thank you is one of the most beautiful things which you can do at all. And this is his son. We call him Pastor Fritz. If you think on his time in Bethel, 1910, he took over. Then we had 40 years of peace in Europe. Then 1914, the First World War. 1918, the end of the First World War. In this time he wrote letters to friends in America asking them for cattle, for cows, because he needed milk. And he got 40 cows from America. And without this, Bethel could not have gone through these years. Then 1923, the time of inflation. Then 1933, Hitler. Then 1939, Hitler's so-called Aktion Gnadentod, the death by mercy for every lifelong sick men and women in Germany. It has been more than 100,000 who have been killed in this time just because they were sick. so-called unworthy life, lebensunwertes Leben. And Bodil Schwingt refused. And no one out of Bethel has been killed. And then again the war, again the end of the war, and then he died in 1946. He was another, he had another personality than his father. He could have been a most excellent theologian, professor of theology at a university. He lived with the sick ones. The administration was done by other men, and he had an excellent feeling of men who were able to do administration. But he himself had time for the diseased ones. And he was a very excellent preacher. He had his birthday on the 14th of August. Yesterday, we reminded in Bethel on this birthday 100 years ago. And we, in the last month, we have asked some of those sick ones who have lived together with Bodil Schwingt, with Pastor Fritz, what impressed them the most. And very many of them said, his kind of preaching. And I want to think about this special piece of spiritual life a little bit more with you. But now, but before, some other pictures. Adenauer visiting Bethel. All the chancellors in Germany and all the presidents in Germany have been in Bethel. And this is the third Bodil Schwingt. He died about 2 months ago, and he retired in 68, and then I had to come. All right. Can we put on the lights now? I said that the most impressive thing which our patients said about Fritz, Pastor Fritz, has been his sermons. They could say sentences out of his sermons 30 years later. Well, and therefore I want to say a little bit on our services in Bethel. In 1933, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, one of our best German theologians. You know that he died in a concentration camp. He wrote a letter to his grandma after having visited a service in Bethel. I read a passage out of this letter. The time here in Bethel has made a great impression on me. Here there is simply a part of the church which understands what can be of importance for a church and what cannot. I am just returned from a service. It is remarkable to see the crowds of epileptics and other sick filling the whole church, among them the male and female nurses, who must help if one falls, and then besides all old trams of the roads, the theology students, the children and pastors with their families. But nevertheless, the scene is dominated by the sick, who listen with great devotion. This is it. Who listen with great devotion. Indeed, for these people there must be an experience of life which is quite unusual, since they cannot be master of themselves and must be prepared every moment for their illness to seize them, the epileptics, when the attack is coming. At such moments, it caught a glimpse of this for the first time, for this condition of being actually defenseless may perhaps reveal to these people certain actualities of our human existence in which we are in fact basically defenseless more clearly than can ever be possible for us who are healthy. That means these very heavy sick men and women may be on the dark side of life, but there are also things which put them on the light side of life. They have something which we do not have, this kind of eagerly listening, because they need to be comforted. They need a word which helps them to stay and to have, well, the kind of feeling I can live. I think Bonhoeffer is completely right with this kind of looking at those who are those sick ones who are listening in our services. And therefore, I wanted to talk with you a little bit on this problem of listening. I read a short passage out of chapter 16 in the Acts. St. Paul, and from thence to Philippi, which is the chief city of that part of Macedonia, and a colony, and we were in that city abiding 13 days. And on a Sabbath we went out of the city by a riverside, where prayer was wont to be made. And we sat down and spake unto the woman which resorted thither. And a certain woman named Lydia, a seller of purple of the city of Thyatira, which worshipped God, heard us, whose heart the Lord opened. This is the story of St. Paul coming to Europe for the first time. He didn't probably know what this was, what was included in it. Europe was the part of the world which took over a leading position for the next 2,000 years. And in this part of the world, the gospel had to come. God is reigning the world. So he came over, and this Philippi has been the first city into which he came. Now, he didn't find a synagogue. Philippi was a Roman city, Roman soldiers, Roman officers, Roman administration. But he knew in this case, if there is at all a Jewish congregation, they will meet at a river, because Jewish people living under heathens need washing in each service. And indeed, he found a group of Jews, or not Jews, but those who went to the service of Jewish service together, and he stand up and preached the gospel. Now, this is a service. Someone who is coming and brings the gospel, the word of God, and this is something tremendous. That in the world we have not only thousand meanings of thousand men, but God is speaking to us. This is tremendous. And the others listening, nothing else than listening. Lydia, I don't know who Lydia has been. I don't know how old she was, whether she was sick or healthy. I don't know nothing. I don't know how intelligent she has been. There's only one thing which she did. She heard us. She was listening. To listen is some kind of an activity, a passive activity, but really an activity. You know the story of Martha and Maria. Martha was busy. It looked like Martha was active. Maria sitting down. It seemed that Maria was passive. But this is not right. The intensive activity was with Martha, with Maria, listening. To listen is some kind of a activity of being ready to get some things. An activity of receptance for something. And a very intensive activity. You know that Jesus closed very often his preaching by the sentence, "He that has ears to hear, let him hear." Well, you could say, what a nonsense. We have our ears to hear. Our ears to hear. For what other purpose? But he meant there's difficult, different types of listening. If we meet one another just 5 minutes before lunch or supper is beginning and talk with one another, well, it goes into this ear and it goes out the other ear. But if someone is in a hospital and they make all these diagnosis things with all these instruments, and then the physician calls you up and he wants to tell you what the result of his diagnosis is, it can be no one can help you. Then you are going to listen. Or when I for the first time met my wife, and we fell in love to one another, and the day was coming on which I said, "I love you," and she answered, "I love you too." Well, then you listen. And you want to hear this sentence again and again, every day, even if you are married for 30 years or more. I got my first letter in America now from my wife. Well, and then you sit down and this just goes through mind and heart and all your bones, you know. I love you. This kind of listening is meant in the Bible. The next sentence is, Lydia heard us, whose heart the Lord opened. There's some picture behind the sentence, namely, someone is taking a key, putting it in, and closing the door, opening the door. So, St. Paul was standing here preaching, a woman was listening, and then someone came. In this act of passive activity, took a key and opened her heart. And who is this someone? Not St. Paul with his marvelous preaching, but the Lord. The Lord who in these days, when St. Paul has been in Philippi, about 20 years before had died. But he was in Philippi when Paul, his messenger, was preaching. And there only had to be someone who really was listening. Then the Lord opened her heart. A famous European theologian in our days, Emil Bronner, has written a book with the title Wahrheit als Begegnung. That means truth in the way of encountering a person. There are different truths. The truth which we learn from school, mathematics. The truth of all these facts. The truth with which you can make experiments and build up technical instruments and things like this. The truth in lexicon, and you have quite a lot of lexicon in the world. All these truths are necessary and you need them, but there's some other quality of truth. The quality of truth in the sentence of my wife, I love you, is something else than all this quality of all these facts. My wife cannot prove that it is right, that it is really right that she loves me. She only can invite me, I love you, please take my love. And then day by day I experience her love. But even after having been married for 30 years, she cannot prove her love and I cannot prove my love. It's not a fact like this business with fact truth. You only can say it again and can invite another person to go into this truth and experiences. And exactly this is it with God is saying to us, I love you. I, God, love you. Now, many of our sick persons in Bethel cannot understand high theology. And many of the sermons which have been given here, they couldn't be understood by many of our sick people. But if you succeed in telling a sick person God loves you, even if he cannot speak and understand a word, you can speak in another kind of language. Pastor von Bodelschwing visited a young boy who was not able to sit. If he was sitting, his head went down and was on the table. He couldn't understand a single word. Bullswing sat on his side and also put his head on the table, on the side of this head of this young boy. And then he got with his hands across his hair. This was his kind of preaching. Not by words. Words, he wouldn't understand a single word. But you can preach by gestures. Mothers know this. When they are going along with their babies, and those who love one another, they also know it. They can sit together saying no word, but speaking with one another for an whole hour. But just by gestures. So we have to learn the language going along with diseased people. Not they. They are unable. We have to learn the right language. And to say to a person who is not able to understand a single intelligent sentence said by words, is able to understand, I love you. And then he has understood the very heart of the wisdom of the world. There might be thousands of professors who know books and maybe everything. If they do not know this, God loves you, then they miss the very center of wisdom. And a child which is diseased and cannot write a single word and not speak a single word, if he or she understands, I am in the love of God, then he has understood the very center of wisdom. That's a miracle of the gospel, that it is so easy that someone who doesn't understand one single sentence can understand the whole gospel. And a professor of what theology or whatever else may miss it. That's a very astonishing miracle of the gospel. Therefore, I invite you to learn from our diseased ones. You have heard it in the letter of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Be listening and again listening to what God has to say to us. Thank you.